Get the meaning behind the numbers and more.
Having better video, better isolation tapes, better information. Analytics certainly has been an additional tool that has helped. And I think NHL teams have started to stop scouting with a measuring tape and look at a player based on what's their production, whether it's at the junior level or into the NHL. What do they produce? How do they produce? And that's what really matters. And just then trying to find a spot for that player within your lineup.
This is TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, the voice of hockey.
Yes, welcome to the show. Ready to roll on another edition of TSN Hockey Analytics. You're listening on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud. I'm Andy McNamara. Give us a follow on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. So much to get to today. Our usual cast of characters from TSN.ca, hockey analytics writers Travis Yost and Scott Cullen will be by, as well as the editor-in-chief from The Athletic Toronto, James Myrtle. Special guest from Sirius XM and This Week in College Hockey, Zygfrid Cassidy, to talk about the Boston Bruins situation and also what that might mean to the Vegas coaching situation. But before we get to that, let's kick it off, as we always do, with Travis Yost from TSN.ca. Travis, how's it going, bud?
No, I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Doing well, my friend. Doing well. Listen, this is we're getting down to it, right? The trade deadline's coming. We're into crunch time in that time of the season in the NHL. So what are you expecting in this stretch run as we lead up to the playoffs?
I'm really hoping at least two more teams drop out of the playoff race in February, because on one hand, I really do enjoy a stretch run where there's like 17 teams fighting for four playoff berths, but it's also kind of ridiculous. I mean, this is kind of the balance that we're trying to strike here, in terms of you want to see the field kind of winnowing down a bit. The NHL has never been able to find that optimal piece, and it seems especially true this year, right? Like, Arizona and Colorado are definitely going to be sellers, but you could realistically make the argument that any team not named one of those two could push for a playoff spot. And, like, yeah, there's varying degrees of reality, but I'd like to see a couple teams, maybe Dallas and maybe one other team's kind of drop out of it, maybe Vancouver as well, start trying to sell off some pieces, make this an interesting trade deadline, and then kind of just fully accelerate to this crazy, crazy run. Especially, I think it's going to be even more interesting in the Western Conference for those last couple wild card spots.
Well, Travis, you're right, though, because in the East, technically, the team that's in last, Detroit, is tied with Buffalo only 7 points out, right? Like, it's not likely, but you could still go on a run and make a push.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is the point we've harped on here, but the standings are just so bizarre this year.
Yeah,
more than really any year I can remember, because there's this weird power imbalance where the Eastern Conference has been so much better. That's number one. And then number two, these kind of crappy teams in the Eastern Conference have really picked up points. And, like, we know that the real talent is in the East, but even, like, the middle tier and bottom tier teams have either fought it even or even slightly better than even against the Western Conference. So you have this weird playoff divide where this I think is an underwritten story right now, but the playoff cut line in the Eastern Conference, when I last looked at it Thursday, was around 94 points. In the West, it's going to be about 86. I mean, that is a substantial difference. So we need to totally operate with different thresholds here. If you're a point per game team in the West, you're absolutely in the playoff race. If you're a point per game team in the East, you're probably not in the playoff race, because the threshold is going to be so much higher.
Is there a team you're most intrigued with, whether it's hunting for that last wild card spot or in general bottoming out?
Oh, there's two really, really good ones. I'm glad you asked that question. I have been on the Calgary Flames bandwagon all season long, and I just think everything has broken unfavorably for that team, and they are still very much in the hunt. Last I checked, they're a point or 2 points out of the last wild card spot. They are fifth in even strength 5-on-5 shot differentials and scoring chances in the last 15 games. The story is they just have not gotten super – they haven't gotten a real good stretch run of goaltending this year. Chad Johnson's been kind of a blessing for the team, but it's been still roller coastery in net. And they really have had such a low shooting percentage through the year. I think they're 25th in the league, one of the lowest PDOs in the entire NHL. And here they are. They're right here. And that's because generally they're skating well with 5-on-5. They're able to compete with these teams, and especially some of the better teams in the Western Conference. I am not, and as a second point to this, I am not clearly convinced that there are many good Western Conference teams out there. So I think there's real opportunity here for Calgary to pull down one of those last two spots in the West. An interesting story in the East, I don't see either team falling out of it, but back in maybe late November, like Montreal and Columbus had these just almost comical leads on their division, if you remember. Well, I guess Columbus and Washington were kind of neck and neck in the division, but really it was those three. You look around right now, Montreal's not playing well. On a point-per-game pace, they're very close to where a team like Ottawa and Toronto and even Boston to a lesser extent are. They've definitely fallen closer to the pack. And Columbus, again, Columbus, I think, is down to third or fourth in the division. And again, it's weird because the Rangers are one of the two wild card holders, even though they have 73 points already accumulated on the season. So Columbus is starting to get pushed down the ranks. And I can tell you, you want to be in the fifth spot in the Metro division because of the playoff format, and you'll get that swing game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to be in the fourth spot. Ultimately, it's going to shake out as to what teams are seated where, but Columbus has definitely fallen down the ranks. I still think they're a good team this year, but they are asking for a much tougher draw if they can't get it together.
So, Travis, do you think then with the Blue Jackets that we're seeing maybe closer to what they actually are? Not that that incredible win streak was in any way realistic of an example of what the team could be, but how they're playing now, 4-5-1 in their last 10, do you see them kind of being more of a 500 or slightly above team the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think this is what they are. And that's fine. Like what we talk about. Like a team can be white hot, winning every game, playing well and getting every bounce. And people, when they say, well, that won't continue, what they're saying is they're not going to shoot 12%. They're not going to stop 95% of shots at 5-on-5. That will not continue. But if you're generally outchancing your opposition, you're going to stay in the playoff race and you're going to still play pretty decent hockey. I think you're seeing definitely a correction in their performance, but this is still a good team. The question is, ultimately, and I guarantee you, the only thing that John Tortorella and the rest of that organization care about is we need to win in the playoffs, and I can guarantee you that becomes much more difficult if you're playing a team like a Montreal or a Washington or even a Pittsburgh in the first round, rather than having home ice advantage, maybe playing one of the weaker teams in the East. Like, that matters quite a bit. We know that. So in Columbus, as much as the first half of the season was this miracle run, there's really no margin for error in the East, and especially in the Metro. So they kind of have to get it together again.
In conversation with Travis Yost, TSN.ca hockey analytics writer on Twitter, at Travis Yost. Travis, we know you are an OV junkie, right? Which means, of course, Washington Capitals. You wouldn't mind them going farther, a little bit farther this year. Is it time for the Capitals to go all in on a cup run? No more excuses, no more waiting around. Go all in, chips to the middle of the table. And if so, is there a player that you feel they would really benefit from?
Oh, that's a really good question. The answer is definitely yes, by the way. I don't see the argument in which, if you look at the standings right now, what is the argument of them not being definitively the best team in the NHL?
Right.
They have a plus 69 goal differential. I know Minnesota's had a great year. I don't think people see Minnesota as the best team in the league. And realistically, that is the only team that is remotely close to them in goal differential. I think Pittsburgh and the Rangers are like plus 39, plus 40. That is still like 30 goals behind the Capitals there. That's how dominant the Capitals have been. And, it is Ovechkin. It's a litany of other players that are available. If you want to talk about truly all in, though, and the two sellers out there, there are two names. One we know is available. We know Matthew Shane is available.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to command a steep price from Washington or any team for that matter. But if you can get Matthew Shane, the story changes. That's the reality. You can probably plug him on your second line if you're Washington, which is ridiculous. And if the answer was on the defensive side, much less speculation about whether or not he's available, but Oliver Ekman-Larsson's kind of in this weird position now in Arizona where he's now been, the guy for 4 or so years. Nothing has changed. That team is bottoming out yet again. I don't put any of that on Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but really, it's going to be, how does that new front office want to dictate where they go? Do they want to totally bottom out? Do they want to gut this thing and rebuild it again? There's not a lot of talent on the roster. He is clearly a first-pairing, elite first-pairing talent. If this is a guy that becomes available and you're Washington and you just say, you know what, here's our chance. We're in and we don't care what the price is. Like, this is the time to do it. And I am, as I've gotten older in my older years of my life, I have become more and more convinced that when you have these opportunities and you're one of the top two or three teams in the league, you have to roll the dice. You have to say, look, we're going to swallow the pill. We know we're going to give up $1.20 to get a dollar, but that dollar today could make the difference in winning this championship. And I mean, you just see it time and time again. I feel like there's so many teams that they say, look, we also want to build for the future while we can still win today. The reality is Ovechkin's not getting any younger. Their core is their age. I mean, their core is right around the age where you see real peak performance outside of Ovechkin. Braden Holtby is right in the prime of his career arc. Like, this is the time if you want to move.
Yeah, and sometimes, Travis, the future never comes, right? So if you're going to go get the ring, and then the fan base will forgive you for a year or two while you figure stuff out. So we'll have to wait and see. Be an interesting trade deadline, hopefully. Travis, thanks so much.
All right, trade deadline's on my birthday. Should I take off?
Oh, absolutely take it. Well, you know what? Take off the day before, because typically that's when everything happens, right?
I'll take off both days.
There you go. Go to Hawaii again. Yeah, lousy guy. All right. See you, buddy.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. That is Travis Yost, TSN.ca hockey analytics writer on Twitter, at Travis Yost. Travis continuously travels to exotic locations. We freeze our butts off here in Toronto. We're going to take the break. Afterwards, James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, joins me. We're going to talk Leafs, Blues, and Islanders. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.
Get the meaning behind the numbers and more. This is TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, the voice of hockey.
Matthews into the slot, comes back with a shot, he scores! Austin Matthews! Holy mackinac, the Leafs have taken the lead!
Drops it way back for Vladimir Tarasenko, weaves it into the Toronto zone, cuts it in, shoots and scores! Vladimir Tarasenko wins the game in overtime, 20 seconds in!
A thriller in Toronto against the Blues earlier this week. Welcome back to TSN Hockey Analytics. I'm Andy McNamara. You're listening on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa, on iTunes and SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter, at TSN Analytics, myself, at AndyMC81. To talk Leafs, Blues, Islanders, and more, James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, on the line. James, how's it going?
Good, Andy. How are you doing?
Good stuff, man. Listen, you wrote an article in The Athletic this week about Austin Matthews and the Leaf rookies continuing to put up points despite their tough second half schedule. So many people have hypothesized that they might be hitting that rookie wall in coming weeks, that it's coming. But all signs so far point to really that not being the case. What does the data say about them possibly getting to that rookie wall?
Well, I mean, in the case of the Leafs guys, it says that they're getting better, you know, that they're playing better. I mean, you look at what Mitch Marner's done, or William Nylander, or Zach Hyman, or Connor Brown. I mean, their production, and even Austin Matthews, too. I mean, the slow periods of his point production were early in the year. They've all been picking up the pace. And I don't know if there is such a thing as a rookie wall, or if that's just one of those sports writer cliches that we invented 20 or 30 years ago, and we still talk about it today. You know, I'm kind of inclined to think that every player is different, and we, for whatever reason, tend to remember players that get hot right away as a young player and then tail off, as opposed to, you know, the slow build and the slow improvement. It kind of makes more sense what we're seeing with the Leafs young players, where first 15 to 20 games, they're kind of figuring the league out a little bit, and then once they get more and more comfortable, they start to produce more, they start to get more ice time from the coach, which is certainly happening with most of the rookies that Mike Babcock has on his team, and we've seen their point production go up. I mean, they're creeping closer and closer to that record of most points by rookies combined on a team that was set by the 1993 Winnipeg Jets. They're on pace to finish only five back of that, so they've been getting closer and closer, and I'm inclined to think that that's going to continue.
And we heard in the off the top coming in that ridiculous goal by Vladimir Tarasenko in overtime, just 20 seconds in Thursday night to take care of the Leafs in OT. Leads the league in even strength goals since 2014, has really become one of the best players in the entire league, despite kind of still being under the radar. What makes him so special? What makes him one of the best?
Yeah, well, the story I wrote yesterday for The Athletic about Tarasenko was focusing kind of on his physical gifts. And I talked to some guys with the Blues. I talked to Roman Polak, who played with him, obviously, in St. Louis. I talked to Zaitsev, who knows him from Russia. And Zaitsev actually played under Tarasenko's dad, Andrei Tarasenko, who was their coach. And they played together in the KHL going back, you know, 6 or 7 years. So Zaitsev had a lot of great insight. And he said that after every single practice, it was always Vladimir Tarasenko doing extra training with his dad and working on leg strength and working on all these things. And for people that haven't seen Vladimir Tarasenko, the guy is built like a house. Like, he has one of the most ridiculous builds in the whole NHL. They list him at 6 feet tall. I wouldn't be surprised if he's only 5'11", but he is a very legitimate 220 pounds. He is just ripped in his upper body, his forearms, his chest. And that nickname that he's got, Tank, I always thought that was because of, you know, his last name, or he's from Russia or something like that. No, it's because he is literally shaped like a tank. And, you know, the other Blues players were telling me that you cannot get the puck off of him. You cannot knock him over. And that he has the lowest center of gravity in the league. And it'd be like trying to knock over a tank, you know. And I was interested that, you know, some of the Blues defensemen like Robert Bertuzzo and Colton Parayko, they said that Tarasenko is harder to knock over and get the puck from than Sidney Crosby. So, and
really?
I think everyone knows how low of a base that Sidney Crosby has and how hard it is to get the puck from him. They said Tarasenko is even more difficult just because he's got that extra natural strength to his body. So it was interesting to write the story and learn a little bit more because, like you said off the top, I think Tarasenko is one of the very best players in the league, certainly one of the very best offensive players in the league, second in goals only to Ovechkin in the last 3 years. You know, I think we could have got to start giving him his due as one of the most dangerous players in the league, and Leafs fans saw why 2 nights ago.
In conversation with James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto, on Twitter, at Myrtle. Let's go to the New York Islanders here. 7-1-2 since Jack Capuano was fired and replaced by Doug Weight. So you have Weight with the Islanders tied for the second most points since the coaching change. They're making a push for the playoffs. They're, I think, 3 points back as of Saturday, right now of the second and final wildcard spot. Only team with a positive goal differential out of all the non-playoff teams. Could you see the Islanders emerging as the final wildcard spot?
Yeah, they're coming hard. I mean, they might even be higher than that. You know, I like Thomas Greiss in net. He's got a .922 save percentage this year. He's a good goaltender, you know, and they gave him that new deal as a result. But what's really interesting is you look at the coaching change. First 42 games of the season under Capuano, the Islanders' puck possession stats were down around 47%. They were 27th in the league. Last 10 games with Doug Weight comes in there, they're at 52%. They're top 10 in the NHL. So they're owning the puck a lot better than they did under Jack Capuano. And I was really impressed with the way that the Islanders played against the Leafs last week. I was really impressed because they were getting to the front of the net, you know, and against the Leafs, they had 38 scoring chances at even strength. They had 18 high danger scoring chances. That game was basically them throwing everything at the Leafs goaltender. And that's why they came back in that game. And that's why the Leafs weren't able to hold them off, is that they were just doing a really good job at puck possession, but not only that, but getting puck possession right in tight around the goal. And when you've got big guys like Tavares and Anders Lee and Andrew Ladd and Bailey, you know, I was looking at some of the names and at some of the, talk about Tarasenko being a big guy. The Islanders have something like 7 forwards that are 215 pounds or more. Ooh. And when you're planning all of those guys right around the goaltender, it's difficult to deal with. So yeah, no, absolutely. I think that they can be one of the teams that makes it out of the Metro Division. And that might make it tougher for the Leafs if they're not fighting to be in the Atlantic and they get stuck battling for a wild card spot instead.
How much of the credit should go to Doug Weight, right? Because obviously the change, but like...
Yeah. You know what we found in looking at analytics is that coaches can have a big impact on puck possession because puck possession is really tied to the system that you play, how you break the puck out, how you break the puck in over the offensive blue line, how you maintain control of possession in the offensive zone, how you react if your team loses a an offensive zone draw, how aggressive you are. All of those things are impacted by coaching. And it's why with the Leafs we saw they were the worst possession team in the league under Randy Carlyle. They were always down around 45%. Mike Babcock comes in, even with a really bad roster last year. You know, they trade away Phil Kessel. They trade away players all year. Their possession really went up during the year. And this year it's even better. And it's coaching can make a big difference with that. And on the flip side, you look at Anaheim, and they went from Bruce Boudreau to Randy Carlyle, and their possession's really come down. And I think that's going to hurt the Ducks' playoff chances this year.
Yeah. Last one for you here, James. Wanted to get your take on this. Lots of talk over the last week or two in the analytics community about the value of face-offs and how much of an impact they have during a game. Compare that to over a full season. Walk us through some of the opinions you've been hearing around the community in saying what they're saying versus what the traditionalists are valuing face-offs at.
Yeah, well, the big thing with face-offs and analytics is, you know, people who look at this stuff, we value it. We value a face-off. Like, winning a face-off is obviously better than losing a face-off.
Sure.
But I think where the frustration comes in is that face-offs get talked about more than possession. They get talked about more than how you break the puck out. They get talked about more than your zone entries. And they get talked about more than completing passes. They get talked about more than so many things in hockey. You watch a lot of broadcasts, and it's, you know, face-off this, face-off that, face-off this. A face-off is a puck battle. It's a set puck battle where the refs involve in dropping the puck. But it's like all of the hundreds of other puck battles that happen all over the ice, whether they happen behind the net or they happen in the neutral zone. It's another puck battle. So that's how important it is. And you have to win an extra 100 face-offs over your opponent in order to get an extra 2 goals at even strength from winning those face-offs. So even though the Leafs have had games recently where the game against Dallas, where you win a draw in the offensive zone and you shoot the puck into the net right away, that's not that common, and it's not that common to do that a lot more than your opponent. So it kind of cancels each other out with the number of times that happens, but that's basically where it's at. I mean, you have to win a lot more faceoffs than your opponent, or you have to have a player that has a percentage that's, you know, higher than 55% to really make a big difference with faceoffs. So, you know, all the other talents that we talk about, and winning puck battles in general away from the faceoff are more important than faceoffs and should be talked about a lot more than faceoffs are.
James, thank you so much as always, buddy. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
All right. That is James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic Toronto. Follow him on Twitter at Myrtle. After the break, host on Sirius XM, as well as this week in college hockey, Zig Fricassi, friend of the show, joins me, and we'll get into all the Boston Bruins coaching change situation coming right up on TSN Hockey Analytics.
Get the meaning behind the numbers and more. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, the voice of hockey.
It's a shame, just because you have a certain percentage of your customer base occupied with something other than hockey today. That's the parade that's going to happen starting this morning for the Patriots. And the fact that the Bruins are off until Thursday against San Jose, they've been off since Saturday. The timing of it is certainly disappointing.
Welcome back to the show. Yeah, this is TSN Hockey Analytics. I'm Andy McNamara, and you're listening on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa on iTunes and SoundCloud. Get us on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. The Boston Bruins, talk of the town. A hot mess. Firing of head coach Claude Julien. On the line now, host of Sirius XM and this week in college hockey, good friend of mine, Zig Fricassi, on the line. Zig, after 10 years as head coach of the Boston Bruins, one Stanley Cup championship, another trip to the finals, Claude Julien finally got the axe after rumors have been swirling for weeks. Was the firing of Julien and the timing of it surprising to you at all?
Andy, it's always good to be with you, first of all. To answer your question, yeah, because I honestly thought this should have been done after the end of last season. 2 years in a row, the Bruins had missed the playoffs and, you know, declining numbers in each and every year. And last year, I think, was even a little more painful because they had the lead in the Atlantic Division with, what, not even 3 weeks to play in the season.
Right.
And then they just epically melted down. And I saw a team that at times lacked awareness, lacked preparation, lacked urgency. And as wonderful of a coach as Claude has been, sometimes either the message gets old or I think the players – you know, need to be coached a different way. That's why I've always drawn an analogy, Andy, to George Allen, who, of course, was the coach of the Los Angeles Rams and Washington Redskins back in the day. He eschewed rookies. He had no use for them. His mantra was, the future is now. So he always had veterans. To me, again, and I'm watching from a distance, it seems as if this Bruins team infusing more youth, and I'm not sure Claude was ready to embrace it or have them adapt to his system. So I think in the end that a change was needed. And again, the timing of it, even Cam Neely said in an interview that we knew we were going to get beat up for it. I mean, you know, would it have made it a difference if they fired Claude when the score was 28-3 Falcons in the Super Bowl? And I'm not trying to be funny here, because if the Falcons hold on to the Super Bowl win, then we don't have to worry about the parade and all this type of nonsense. It's never easy to fire the all-time winningest coach in the franchise history, so they took some lumps for that, but again, I think it should have already happened. A long answer to your question.
Right, and so assistant Bruce Cassidy replaces him. Bruins are in a wild card spot. Like, we're not talking about a team that's the Colorado Avalanche here, bottom of the barrel. They're still in the playoff spot right now. Do you see Cassidy as a possible long-term option as a bench boss for the Bruins, or just a placeholder and then they'll figure it out in the offseason?
I think it's the former, because you got to remember Don Sweeney, who's now the GM and who's come under fire, and a lot of it I really don't understand, because I think that there's a plan in place there, which we'll get to in a bit. But he worked with Bruce Cassidy in Providence, you know, trying to replenish the P. Bruins roster. And if you look, Providence has been one of the best teams in the AHL all year long, and they've had the likes of Krug and Spooner, Kevin Miller, and some of these other guys, Colin Miller. So they've worked together, have Bruce Cassidy and a lot of these Bruins prospects. I thought when they bumped Butch up to be assistant, I thought maybe that was kind of the telltale plan, that this is the successor in place. I don't see Sweeney being fired. I really don't, because he's tight with Sinden, and of course Sinden still an advisory role, tight with Jeremy Jacobs, so I don't see it happening. I don't see Cam Neely getting fired either. So I see Sweeney being around. If that's the case, I think there's a very good chance Butch Cassidy stays on as the head coach of the Boston Bruins.
In conversation with Zig Fracassi, a host on Sirius XM on Twitter, at Zig Fracassi. Zig, as you said, Don Sweeney coming under fire, Cam Neely a little bit too, but is it more of what's going wrong in Boston, or what's happening in Boston, the result of poor drafts and trades from the former GM, Peter Chiarelli?
I think you're on to a very, very good question, and I would say a lot of it is. I mean, let's face it. You look at what the Bruins did when Chiarelli got there. They started to bring in some of the veterans like an Aaron Ward, a Mark Recchi, Sean Thornton, players like this who I talked about earlier with the veterans. But with the drafts, I mean, let's go back to around 2007. Zach Hamill. I mean, they'd have been better off with Dorothy Hamill, I think. I mean, it's just utterly brutal. I mean, 08, first-round pick. Joe Colborne, who was ultimately dealt. I think he's bounced around with, what, Calgary and Colorado now. 2009, first-round pick, Jordan Caron. Here's one of those guys that they tried to force on, you know, the lineup because he was a first-round pick and it didn't work. Now, of course, they did hit home runs, I thought, with Sagan and Dougie Hamilton the next 2 years, but then there was the incident in Toronto, you know, clubbing and being out late during the playoffs. I think that sent a bad vibe throughout the organization. Hence, later the trade to Dallas for Louis Erickson. I think Joe Morrow is the only guy left from that trade. Hamilton wanted a big contract, apparently wanted his brother to play for the Bruins. So in that particular case, I think Don Sweeney got a little bit scared because Edmonton may have come with a contract offer. So he wound up dealing to Calgary, and they got some multiple picks out of a very, very deep draft, which Donnie couldn't move up to because they wanted Hanifin, but the Carolina Hurricanes weren't parting with it. So I think that the poor trades and the poor drafts have come back to haunt. But as I said, Sweeney's, they've got a plan in place here. I mean, you look at some of the guys that are either on the NCAA level, guys like Charlie McAvoy, who people, you know, you saw him there at the World Junior Championships. He was an absolute beast for Team USA. Trent Frederick, a really good two-way center on his way. Ryan Lindgren from the University of Minnesota. You go back to the three draft picks in first round back in 15. Zaboral making an impact in junior. Jake DeBrusk now starting to make an impact at Providence. And Senshin in the OHL has been lighting it up. That other draft also brought Brandon Carlo, who I think is a three-run homer. He's taken his lumps lately, but I think he's the Bruins' heir apparent to Chara when it comes to the shutdown defenseman. 2014, Pasternak, who's been lighting it up once again. Ryan Donato, Teddy's kid, lighting it up at Harvard, playing for his dad. Anders Bjork, maybe the best player in college hockey nobody knows about at Notre Dame. So the plan is there. There's no doubt, Andy, that there is a plan there, but people in Boston, maybe it's because, you know, of the, was it the 10 championships, including the Bruins in 11, that they've won the last 16 years, maybe a little entitled, a little spoiled, realizing you got to come back to earth just a little bit before you're good again.
Yeah, spoiled for sure, especially, you know, here in Toronto, and we have listeners in Ottawa Tuesday. It's a little lean.
Your beloved Cleveland Browns.
Oh, baby, yeah. Little lean time. That's okay. And you know what, Siegfried, I didn't mention, you're also host of This Week in College Hockey. So obviously you're in-depth. Where can people catch that? Because that's the insight you were able to give there on the prospects was fascinating.
Thank you. It's 10 o'clock tomorrow night, and it's on our College Sports Nation channel, Sirius XM 84.
Nice. All right. Yeah. And in conversation with Zig Fricassi on Twitter, at Zig Fricassi. He'll be tweeting out info, I'm sure, where you can hear and listen to that and all that good stuff. So, Zig, with any head coach firing, it seems, this year, any coaching change or any coach floating around, it immediately comes up. Okay, why was he fired? And then, is he going to coach Las Vegas?
Yes.
Claude Julien, do you think he's a candidate for Vegas?
Are there slot machines in Vegas?
Lots, yes.
Yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he is. I mean, let's face it. You know, and then also Ken Hitchcock. I mean, how about having two guys with Stanley Cup pedigree, two of the all-time greats being available? Now, you know, do they want the headache of trying to build up a team? Or I saw what Capuano was to meet with Vegas officials, and a lot of people knocked him, but you know, before this year, Andy, he had the Islanders with back-to-back 100-point seasons, and, you know, playing in Brooklyn too, with that lousy ice at Barclays Center. I think that flew a little too under the radar. So Vegas is going to have their pick. I think George McPhee, who did a really good job building up the Caps, is going to build this Vegas team up. Or do they go Gerard Gallant? So in other words, for an expansion team to have, you know, two, I believe, Hall of Famers in Julien and Hitchcock available, a solid coach in Capuano and another solid guy in Gallant, Vegas is going to have their pick of the litter as far as good coaches go.
Zig, do you think it comes, because with Vegas, it's all, the players, there might be distractions, and do you think it really matters, the personality of the coach that goes there? Because ultimately, people who are playing there, New York is a heck of a city, right? You can go out and do stuff all the time in New York, too.
See it every day, so yeah.
Right? Like people get used to it. Do you think it's the personality of the head coach ultimately will be that big of a deal of who they choose to go to Vegas?
Very good question. I would say, I mean, you're going to have your expansion draft, which basically means you're going to get the pick of the not so great litter.
Right.
So, but and you know as well as I do, Andy, that's basically a facade to field a team while your youngsters start to build up. Again, you go back to a guy like Julien or even Hitch. You know, their reputation with maybe younger players might not be what it should be. In other words, they're used to working with the veterans and established hands, where maybe because a guy like Capuano's a little bit younger, Gerard's even a little younger, was a standout player in his day, do they have more patience with the players? So I think that's what you're going to have to look at. And who's to say, you know, at this particular point in time, a job like Dallas may not come available. How about another potential coach that could be on the way out if his deal's not renewed? Lindy Ruff, another of the all-time, you know, very, very good coaches there are. So that could be yet another name Vegas has. And would Claude Julien then be available for the Dallas job should it come open, or any other jobs that come open? This is going to be an intriguing off-season. Yeah. And the two words, Andy, that I don't think a lot of teams like, flat cap.
Ooh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Because if the cap don't go up, you're not going to see a lot of trades, free agent signings. This could be a problem.
Interesting. Going to be fun to follow. Zig, thank you so much for the insight on the Boston situation and then the Vegas takes as well. Let's do it again soon.
Andy, anytime, man.
That was Zig Fricassi, host on Sirius XM and This Week in College Hockey. Get him on Twitter, at Zig Fricassi. After the break, we'll wrap up the show with TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen with heroes and zeros and the top hockey analytics storylines of the week. You're listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.
Get the meaning behind the numbers and more. This is TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, the voice of hockey.
Back to wrap up another edition of TSN Hockey Analytics. I'm Andy McNamara, and you're listening on TSN 1050 Toronto, TSN 1200 Ottawa. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Give us a follow on Twitter at TSN Analytics, myself at AndyMC81. Let's welcome in TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen to the show. Scotty, how's it going?
Great, Andy. How are you today?
Very well, my friend. And as usual, we begin with...
It's time for the best and worst of the NHL this week. Hockey Analytics, Heroes and Zeros with Scott Cullen and Andy McNamara.
So there we go. Who is your first hero, I guess, Scotty?
Let's start with a hero. I'm going with Anders Lee of the New York Islanders. He had 14 points in his past 11 games before today in which the Islanders were shut out. And he'd been running 60% Corsi over that time. He's really had a good boost now playing with John Tavares and Josh Bailey on the Islanders' top line. He started the year very poorly. He had 2 points in 18 games, but he broke his leg late last season, so it might have taken him some time to get back into form. But Anders Lee has become a pretty nice contributor for the Islanders. And then even today, even though he didn't have any points, had the best Corsi for the Islanders, 22-4, 4 against, over 81%. In their 3-0 loss to the Senators.
Impressive. To Washington for your second hero.
Brett Connolly. Pretty much anybody on Washington is a good bet to be producing enough to qualify here. But Brett Connolly has 7 points during a 5-game point streak, 59% Corsi in that time as a third-line forward here for the Caps. And they signed him as a cheap unrestricted free agent when he didn't get a qualifying offer from the Bruins after last season. And look, he's not a great player, but, you know, he's 24 years old and had 25 points in 71 games last year, and that wasn't enough for Boston to keep him around. And Washington is now reaping the rewards as Connolly's got 12 goals in 41 games.
Yeah, and you look at his Corsi 4 percentage, it's at 55.8%, about 4% higher than his career average right now. So nice pick there. Those were the best. Now to the worst of the week. Give us the first zero.
First zero is Noah Hanifin. High draft pick defenseman, but he's struggled lately. Coming into today, he had been on for 8 goals against, no goals for in the past 7 games, and has already been on for another goal against today. So it's a downward trend, particularly because of the way that the Hurricanes use Hanifin. They really shelter him. He gets third pair minutes, and it's not like he's getting out there against other teams' top line. So to go on a run with no goals for and 9 against is not ideal.
No, a bit of a sophomore slump there for Hanifin. Who's the final zero?
Our final zero is Pavel Buchnevich of the New York Rangers. In his past 8 games, he has 1 assist and just 9 shots on goal with a 45% Corsi. Now, look, he missed a bunch of time this year with back problems, but he did have 14 points in his first 14 games prior to this downward trend, and this downward trend has also resulted in him kind of getting bumped to the fourth line where he's playing 8, 9, 10 minutes a night. And so, lots of potential for Buchnevich, but right now he's in a bit of a dry spell for the Rangers.
All right, that was Heroes and Zeros. Make sure to catch mine and Scotty's Heroes and Zeros video on TSN.ca every Monday afternoon. Of course, Scott Cullen at TSN, Scott Cullen on Twitter, and statistically speaking, Monday to Friday, also on TSN.ca. Let's dive into some of your top 10 storylines of the week, Scotty. And I thought, listen, man, you did an amazing job on the Trade Center Watch, breaking down each team's roster on the East and the Western conferences. I won't make you go through all of them. We don't have enough time. But just some highlights for you, right? Like, you were looking at free agents there, prospects, possible plans leading to the deadline. Very in-depth. So for anybody who has not checked that out, I'm sure you tweeted out the link, Scotty, but then at TSN.ca. So just go through a couple of highlights for us.
Well, I mean, it all kind of depends on you know, a team situation. And right now there's a lot of teams that are still kind of in this mushy middle that you're not quite sure whether they're ready to give up on the season or not. But I think we're starting to see a few that, it should be, you know, pretty clear. I mean, I think the Detroit Red Wings, they're probably going to hang around for a little bit longer before they start selling. But when they do, I think Thomas Vanek becomes an interesting player. You know, in past years, Vanek has, you know, been kind of hit and miss. But I think he's had a really good year for Detroit. And I think because he's on an inexpensive contract, there are going to be teams who, you know, who might be tight against the cap. But you should be able to fit Thomas Vanek in, and he could add some scoring touch. Like I've heard some rumors that a team like Chicago, for example, who's, you know, they've always been looking for somebody to play alongside Jonathan Toews pretty much all year, and certainly that would be a nice landing spot if that's where Thomas Vanek ends up. Another team that is a massive surprise that they're kind of in this position, but the Tampa Bay Lightning are, you know, they're pretty close to being sellers. You know, that remember when Stamkos got hurt, and there were a few other injuries at the time, and when we talked about it, we were like, "Oh, Tampa Bay will be able to handle it. They have so much talent, lots of depth there." You know, it's not ideal to lose Stamkos, but they can handle it. Well, clearly they haven't.
No,
and you know, this isn't just they lost the scoring from Stamkos. Like Ben Bishop was great last year and hasn't been great this year. You know, all these things kind of combine to leave them on the outside looking in at the moment. And because of that, Bishop, you know, who's going to be a pending free agent, seems like a, you know, one of the goalies who's going to be out there on the market. I think Vancouver's Ryan Miller is another. You know, and it'll be interesting to see which teams are kind of interested enough to invest in one of those big time goalies. Like I think of a team like St. Louis, who had, you know, Ken Hitchcock's job was basically because he lost his job because the goaltending was so poor. Now it's been much better since they got rid of Hitch. But you'd wonder if the Blues, you know, if Jake Allen kind of reverts back to what he had played for the first half of the year, whether they might be a team who's interested in adding a solid veteran goalie to give them, you know, a fighting chance in the playoffs.
Scotty, what about someone like Columbus, right? They had that hot streak, now been kind of middling. They're third in the Metro right now. Is that a team you think it would be smart for them to try to make a big move and bump themselves back up?
Well, I think yes. And I mean, not to the point where, you know, you're going to sacrifice massive amounts of your future.
Sure.
But if you're in the Metropolitan Division, you can't, you know, take Columbus's roster and say, wow, we're good to go up against Pittsburgh and Washington the way we are.
Right, right.
Because, look, Pittsburgh and Washington are the top two teams in the league, but I think fairly clearly, you know, Minnesota you can make an argument for, but certainly in the East, you know, those are the top two teams. And if you're Columbus, I think the best kind of approach for them is to upgrade their defense, because it's going to be really tough to – you know, to match the firepower of the Capitals and Penguins. So, you know, if you're Columbus, hope that you can get them with good goaltending, with your great power play, and then hopefully an upgrade on the blue line that might help, you know, neutralize some of those great forwards.
Scotty, great job as always. I will see you Monday for the video edition of Heroes and Zeros. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Andy.
All right. TSN.ca hockey columnist Scott Cullen on Twitter at TSN Scott Cullen. Great job, everybody. Thank you to our guests. So, for producer Joe Narsa and Grady Sass, I'm Andy McNamara. You've been listening to TSN Hockey Analytics on TSN 1050, TSN 1200, and on iTunes.